The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, and your drinking JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime. It's World Daily, and yes, it's a match day. Everyone, very exciting. Match day number 3 for Canada.
In an hour, Sharps.
You're listening on SiriusXM, 58 minutes.
6 games today, everyone. I'm James Shulman, by the way. We've got Amy Walsh. We've got Craig Forrest, Jeff Cole, Dan Wong. 6 games in one day. Yeah, it's a bit much.
It's a lot.
Is this the day when we realize 48 teams? Oh, yeah, great. Get the smaller teams a chance. And then you realize.
No. It's great because you don't have to spend time with your family.
No, there is that.
Or your friends or anyone. You just shackle up inside your cabin and turn the TV on.
And in fact, because each group game is played at the same time, it's actually 3 windows, right? As opposed to the 4 windows to watch we've been used to the last little while. So we have group B, C, or B, C, and A, or A, B, and C. Whatever order you want to put it in.
Whatever order you want to put it in. Branched chain amino acids. B, C, and A.
You're such a nerd. Canada.
I know.
Canada against Switzerland. But yeah, I saw today actually there was a report that FIFA are considering the old 64 team World Cup for, I think, 2030.
Yep, I've got the tweet right here. Would you like me to read it? It's our friend of the show, Tom Harrington, said that there are reports out of Germany that negotiations are already underway to have 64 teams at the 2030 World Cup. That would mean 128 matches and an additional round of the knockout phase, plus at least 10 additional days of tournament play. FIFA is slowly deflating its unique wonder. I don't disagree.
There was some additions to that. Number 2 was that they're going to have the World Cup every year. And number 3 was FIFA now owns every flag of every country. So just FYI, if you buy a flag and it doesn't have a FIFA logo on it, it's not an official flag. Just so you know.
Really? You're taking the mic?
Yeah. Okay.
Charms, it's early, but come on.
Well, in a stadium, I could see it, you know, with the whole Pepsi Coke thing. You can't bring a Pepsi into a stadium, for example, right? Or in the area. So, you know, the fact that I even considered it might be real, I think says everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bought it.
Okay. Oh, well done. Wagger, what a
That's
delivery.
That's what they want you to do. That's what they want you to do.
But there was also, there was, Arsene Wenger was pushing for a World Cup every 2 years, remember?
Yeah.
Which, again, would just stop. Right? And 48 teams, we talked about it yesterday. Okay. It's working out better than I thought it might. But 64 is too much just for the length. I mean, we have people have lives a little bit outside of sport, some of us, or some people out there, right? And that would be a long tournament to do. I mean, hey, the money would be good, I guess. So what am I doing? But imagine doing this every day for 64 teams. Woo.
Yeah.
Already Footy we Prime, each other.
Yeah, Footy Prime would have to recruit probably like 6 more people. So Kara and Asa, the contracts are in the mail, just so you know.
The goal scoring records would fall fast.
Yeah,
we're seeing that now.
Well, there's been talks about stat padding throughout the group stage, right? So would it be that if you increase it further? But it's also the prestige. Like, what about, you know, like you're participating in a World Cup. Where does that go? Everybody can get in. I know about investment and development and the counter argument to all of that, but what are we doing here? And I love how we're looking at it through the lens of Footy Prime. We'd have to recruit more members.
6 more people.
What are we doing? Yeah.
We can barely afford these 6.
Yeah.
But no, listen, it's not there yet. And FIFA always, I'll give them credit. They'll discuss anything, right? Doesn't mean it's going to happen. But there's grave concern in my part it's going to be 64 teams in 2030. But Charm, when it's just around several countries, don't forget.
There's another, you shared a little bit of a tidbit, was just that.
Timbit.
Oh, well done.
That's coming later in the show.
Yeah, it is. World Cup Watch.
Don't give
him
extra, ad space. All right.
Yes. brought to you by Timbits. And I had read other in another place that the hydration break. no, I read it online that they're looking at getting rid of it for some of the more of the, and you had heard conversation about that.
It wouldn't surprise me if they discussed that in greater depth.
Because it's ridiculous now. Like it's fully, once again,
no one likes it.
No one likes it. Booing at like Toronto Stadium.
But
they're
not
booing
just Toronto,
everywhere.
Vancouver. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
In Panama, we're on the upper, they're on the front foot.
Yes.
You know, completely changes the momentum. Mm-hmm. Tuchel talked about that too, the English manager.
Yeah.
Yeah. The coaches don't like it. The players don't like it. The fans don't like it. I don't think FIFA like it now.
I don't think they do.
They're acknowledging that.
Yeah.
The broadcasters like it because they get on the money. FIFA don't get the money for it. And that's one thing that is, I have heard. They don't get the money for it, but the broadcasters do get the money for it.
Fox, so just so you know, last night we didn't get the sultry voice of Craig Forrest, his baritone. We got Foxes, and they are making a quarter billion dollars more, $250 million more because of the hydration breaks. Yes, it suits television, but it is once again changing the game on the pitch. Yeah. And it's not, it was so short thought out, short thinking, myopic.
That's
And yes, it worked in the middle of summer for the Club World Cup last summer, right? It worked because it was 38 degrees. They were having issues with people like, it was, yes, honestly dangerous at some of those matches. It is the silliest thing right now. To your point, Dubs, yesterday you said common sense. No common sense in implementing this hydration break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the FIFA don't directly make money off this for this World Cup. Oh, but in the future, the rights are going to be more expensive, so they will benefit eventually.
Oh, good point. Yeah,
because they
can say, listen, you've got this 6 minutes additional ad space within each broadcast. So therefore, we want $1 trillion for the package.
And expensive, right? I mean, because everybody's watching. So it's a really good slot. They'd be charging big money for that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to see it at all. It's stupid from a tactical standpoint and a football flow tempo standpoint. I don't want to see it. But at least do a squeeze back so you can at least keep your eye on the pitch a little bit.
It's
full screen. It just breaks it up so much. It genuinely feels like a quarter now.
Okay, I'm going to give you a little scenario that I ran into because of it. I was watching, I forget what match, but it wasn't one I was totally sold at to watch the entire match. I was going to keep it on as at Dub's house in the background. I forgot about it because I turned the channel to watch something else in between, just like channel flipping. And I forgot that the match was going on because I got into something else.
That's a great point, though.
Yeah. And it changed my viewing habits. So if they, to Craig's point, if they want to charge this $9 million per 30-second spot is what I've heard on the street or read. I did read that, $9 million a spot. You are now giving people the opportunity, because it is a full 3 minutes, to change their lifestyle and to change the channel. And once you're doing that, you are now letting that opportunity slip away because you've kind of ruined your consistency, if I should say that correctly.
Yeah. Can you imagine for the final what that slot would be? You look what Super Bowl numbers are, and you got a final that's 10 times that big.
Right.
What the?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This message is brought to you by Tim Hortons at participating restaurants in Canada for a limited time.
Introducing Tim's Taste of the Globe, a limited time squad of globally inspired Timbits and iced cap flavors.
And trust us, this lineup came to play.
We're talking a Brazilian lime cheesecake Timbit,
a French chocolate creme brulee Timbit,
an Italian cappuccino Timbit,
and a Canadian fireworks Timbit,
plus a Mexican caramel churro ice cap that absolutely deserves a chant.
It's game on at Tim's with the new Timbits and ice cap flavors from around the globe.
Try them all today.
I will.
I know you will. Now back to the show.
But I think what it distills down to is, yes, it's the broadcast rights and how FIFA might benefit from that in the future and those advertising slots at this point. And Wonger, your great point about your viewing habits and like how you're consuming the sport. But they are changing the sport by introducing these hydration breaks. So yeah. I think you have to back away from it. Like if there's rumors that they're realizing that they've made an egregious error, then say as much and change it. Mm-hmm. And whether that's for the next one or it's the next major tournament, I think it was an error to introduce it at a World Cup. Like trial that somewhere else. And you did mention mm-hmm. the Club World Cup, but at least have it in an environment where it replicates what would actually happen. So like this might change the game once all the analytics, the data comes back and the swings of momentum and the goals that are produced immediately following, or, you know, the flow charts and like the momentum, you know, you see like the peaks and the valleys from one team versus the other. Like it's going to be forever changed and they have to back away from it. Like you have to back down. You made an error, admit it, and then move on. Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine the PR win for FIFA if they finally acknowledge they made a mistake and say, you know, we're sorry, we screwed up. You know, they are seen as an arrogant organization, right? That can do no wrong in their eyes. That's the perception, the public perception of FIFA, whether it's right or wrong, that is the public perception. For Gianni Infantino to hold a press conference or put a release and say, we thought this was a good idea. We really did. And we made a mistake. So we're changing it. They get some points for that.
Mm-hmm. They'd gain some goodwill for sure. They show a little bit of contrition, 100%. Yep.
Mm. Contrition, eh?
I wonder if there's a contract where that mentions all this, and if that's the case, and they try to pull it, is there lawsuits? Because I know after the Russia Qatar thing, because Qatar was moved to the summer, it was actually Fox who threatened a lawsuit, which then FIFA said, oh, hold on a second. We'll give you the next one, 26, for the same price.
Oh, same price, sorry. Yeah, yeah.
For the same price.
That's right. A good point, because these ad spots have been sold well before the tournament.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm. And Fox are running the show. They're paying more money than anybody in the world for rights. They're running the show.
Yeah. I haven't watched Fox yet. I've just seen the clips on social with Ibra and Henri and obviously Lalas. Dubs, why you
I watched a bit yesterday. I was watching my friend Claire Rustad, and then I just kind of like switched the channel. I was in the hotel. I was like, let me take in, like, you know, everybody's been talking about this chemistry and the banter on this panel and how they're vilifying Lalas. And it wasn't great. Admittedly, I didn't watch the entirety of a broadcast, but I watched like a recap of a couple of matches as they were leading into the setup in a pregame, like I think setting the table for the England match. And it was just bouncing back and forth between Thierry Henry, Zlatan, and Lalas. And it was clunky. There was no banter. There's zero chemistry. I was like, this, if you didn't know who the big names were on that panel, you'd just be like, this is absolute shite.
Really?
Yep.
And it's too bad because Rebecca Lowe, she's hosting, right?
Yeah, she's quite good.
One of the great hosts, yeah. Yeah.
She was the lone bright spot.
Can I mention,
I had a
really good conversation with one of my American friends, and they only know what they know. And they kind of said, you know, I know who Lalas is. I don't like him or dislike him. But those other two guys seem to be bullying him. And it was quite interesting because if you don't know who Adi and Zlatan are, they're coming off as bullies. And it's interesting that the rest of the footballing world, who know everything about him, can give them the, oh, well, Lalas is getting his comeuppance, right? Like there's a little bit of karma there.
There's a context, right?
There's a context. But for people who are insular watching football for the first time, they're actually, those other two are coming off as kind of bullying, demeaning. And it was quite interesting, the take, because I was like, you know what? You're right. That I could see that because they're like, oh, who is this guy? He's the American representing us. I don't know him very well. Don't know what his politics are. And then there's these two guys with accents being a bit douchey, right?
Yes, to them. It's true.
So it's quite interesting how context, perspective, and just familiarity really control that narrative. And going back to, and one more thing was someone said in our comments section, there's one guy who made that Ian Colley or whatever, who made negative, the negative comments about Jesse Marsh.
Yeah.
And he goes, it's not the whole media. I looked it up. It was only him who basically was negative about it. And that got him so many hits. But there was not another international media, maybe domestic, I don't know, but not anybody else in the international media that said anything else. I used three search engines because it put me
in
down
the state,
a little.
I agree with you.
I think
there was a fair amount.
I think generally,
yeah, but international, I don't count the states because
No, but I know you're saying longer, but I think from what I've listened to other podcasts, etc., there's a patronizing sentiment towards Jesse Marsh, and it revolves all around he's American and Ted Lasso, and it started when he went to Leeds. There's that kind of good-natured banter as opposed to criticism, which when does banter become bullying?
Yeah.
Right? And that's
and
kind of the question. And condescension, right? Because there's probably a better word for it. It's condescension.
What show number are we on? What show number are we on now, Sherms?
Well, we balance it beautifully. We balance the banter and the bullying beautifully. We bully when we have to. Generally speaking, it's good-natured banter. By the way, Jimmy's not on today.
That's right. But we all
Jimmy's
know,
very
like,
sensitive.
We all know, though, like how much the chemistry plays into, you know, how that panel comes off. Yes, you're analyzing, you're talking about the match, you're breaking it down, you're talking tactics, you're talking dressing room, all that sort of stuff. But how it comes off is how you relate to the person to your left and to your right. So those producers at CBS must be having fits because there's no very little dynamic. There's very little banter that's good natured that's bringing the viewer in. We've also talked about, you know, engaging the camera for a single. Like you don't, I have a hard time doing that if I'm a single analyst on a panel because, yeah, you're meant to be speaking to the audience. Like I would rather have a real conversation with the person who's asked me the question. But I think this is part of that conversation, that how you're talking about the game, your personality, how that's being conveyed to the person at home is huge in terms of bringing them back again. So how many viewers, and they'll probably see after the fact, how many viewers are they losing? Because people are tuning in to see big names, star power, right? And then maybe they're turned off because of this so-called bullying.
Yeah, no, it's a funny thing, right? Chemistry on TV, because you can't just manufacture it.
No.
Usually it's there or it's not there. And I think there's too many TV executives who all they care about is star power. That's all they care about. Let's get the biggest names and stick them on the desk. And it just doesn't always work. If you get it, it's amazing. You look at the Roy Keane, Gary Lineker, Micah Richards. Mm. You know, it's beautiful. They're big names and it just works, right? They have that. But that's very rare. It's them and it's us, basically. That's it. but it's hard to find it though, right? And as a host, it's so much easier and more enjoyable when you have people that actually you can throw things out and they can throw it back at you and between themselves, each other, without it being clunky and forced. It's not easy, right? Chemistry.
Knowing a line, you know, what I think we do, and this isn't about Footy Prime, but it's about knowing what your friend / colleague / podcast mate / too intimate, because we know so much about each other, that they're even comfortable talking about, whether it's God, Dubs and I.
Yeah,
that like whether it's, you know, the kids' graduation that we're going through now to death, therapy, all of these things that we share you know, about how we're going to go forward in life, and to know that your friend is comfortable talking about that. To your point, Dubs, like when I, the chemistry with those three, I tried to watch them too again, and it was clunky, and it was, you know, these are outtakes that they're getting of all of a sudden Adi with his faces, Laten being very direct. And, but it is, I'm, it's not just clunky. It seems like a bit of a train wreck, and they're looking for a bit of it.
Manufactured. Yeah. Like the chemistry, like what you're talking about, Sharms, with that, the Champions League panel with Kate Scott and then Henri Carragher and Micah Richards. Like that is the dream, right? Because you have all of that. You have the really authentic discussion. You have people talking about the game that on their own are people you're seeking out for their analysis. But then together, everything is elevated. Whereas it seems manufactured with this other panel with Ibrahimovic and Lalas and Henri, and very compartmentalized. There's no together we are better. It's on my own, on my own, on my own. And then I think you're losing viewers.
There aren't many shows out there that could get in one episode talk about testicular cancer, vaginal births, epilepsy, and parent sex lives. Very few shows. And well, here we are. we have that. okay, we'll get to Canada shortly, but I want to get to quickly yesterday's matches and some storylines in particular. We gave Messi and we gave Haaland and we gave all these players credit. And then old Ronaldo, who isn't mobile anymore, and who sees the game through his eyes and no one else's eyes, steps up and scores two goals for Portugal. Really nice goals too, actually. Even let his teammate take a free kick. We've got to give credit where it's due, Craig, haven't we? He's 41. And whether they're better without him, I don't know. But he still scores goals for his country on a regular basis, which is kind of the point of the game, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I think he's one of those guys, you know, like, I was later in the game, I think, are they going to take him off? Mm. No, they're not going to take him off. He's playing Uzbekistan, and they're going to try to pad stats here because everybody's trying to do that against weaker sides, and he was not coming off. But decent team for Portugal, for sure.
Portugal, to Dubs, when she mentioned the love of the game, Portugal looked like they loved the game yesterday. It was free flowing. They all wanted to be out there because they knew they were better to a man against Uzbekistan, and they were enjoying themselves. And they were like little back kicks and little flippy de doos, and you know, all that kind of stuff, right? And I was just like, oh, they're having fun.
Yeah, a little bit of flair, a little bit of cheeky play, right? All the finesse and all of the quality that you expected from this team, you finally saw in Uzbekistan. Mm-hmm. Barely put up a fight. But yeah, I mean, Ronaldo showed up and him screaming in the camera, I'm back. Like, we'll see if he's back versus a more...
It's Uzbekistan, settled down a little bit, right?
No, I know. But I think for him, it was, you know, it was the team's emphatic performance, but it was also Ronaldo showing up. And he was on a hat trick. I mean, that's why he stayed on, like what Craig's talking about, and came so close. So he's got to be frustrated with that. But I think the brace, the way he scored, and Sharm's, what you mentioned, I think the biggest one for me was the quote unquote selfless act to leave the set piece, because never would I have expected him to leave that, because it was the showmanship. It was the wide stance. It was the chest puffed, you know, it's like, oh, he's surely taking this one.
Good acting.
But it was, yeah, very much, you know, so putting it to good use. So yeah, as much as, he was maligned and criticized this World Cup, whether it's stats padding or otherwise, and talking about star power, whether it's panel or on the pitch, like the stars are showing up and showing out. And that's part of what makes a World Cup memorable.
My favorite part was when he peeled off after the free kick went in and started pointing to his head to the sidelines, like it was his idea. Like, rather than going to Mendes and saying, hey, what a nice goal. It's like, me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see another one, though? Like, there was another set piece in the second half where he sets up behind it. It was more central, maybe from about 30 yards, and he runs straight to goal, and it was a deft little chip into him, and it almost results in his hat trick. Like, it was so well executed, and we might not see it again because now teams will be onto it. but it was a really clever dead ball by Portugal.
The look on his face when he scored the first goal, though, man. I mean, talk about a guy that was clearly feeling the pressure.
Yeah.
I mean, he was, you know, remember when Stuart Pearce scored that penalty against in the Euros, I think it was, in the shootout. And if you see it on YouTube, it's this look in his face. He's like, his jaw's yeah. just jutting out. You know the one, Craig, right? And he's so pumped, psycho at his best. He's so like intense. Like, yeah, that was Ronaldo yesterday. He was so intense, and I respected it because we know whether you love him or hate him, there is pressure on that guy's shoulders more than anyone at this World Cup. It's his shoulders. He's the guy under the most pressure because he's the guy that hasn't won it yet, who probably by his ability should have won it. And he's competing against, you know, against himself. But we know what pressure he puts on his shoulders because, like you said, it is stat pumping, padding in this tournament. And I'm not sure it's so much about getting the 3 points for him. It's about getting the goals. But, man, he was up for it. And you couldn't help but feel a little bit pumped yourself watching how excited he was and how intense he was and what it means for the future for this team. And can he drag this team? Does he need to drag this team through this tournament? If the star power, man, it's risen, right? I mean, is that the storyline? We can talk about the smaller teams. Sure, that's great. But right now, as the stars have stood up, Harry Kane didn't yesterday, mind you. Should have scored a goal.
That ball did, though. It still might be going.
Jesus. Again.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give Ghana credit, though, right? I mean, they sat in deep, Craig, and it wasn't great. Wasn't a great match by stretch, but they may be fortunate to have won that, given a couple of posts, but they knew what they were doing. It's the first time I think this World Cup we've seen a team really try and kill a game off.
That's true. It was actually probably the worst World Cup game from a neutral's point of view, I think. There's just nothing really happened. I mean, Ghana did a really good job closing them down and doing what they needed to do, and they're happy about it. And Carlos Queiroz obviously knows what he's doing. And it's actually pretty impressive because Ghana, coming into the World Cup, had 10 games or something, maybe even 12, without a win. Fire the manager 2 months before the tournament, and then he comes in. So, yeah, he's living the dream at the moment at 73 years old.
JC and I do trivia at our Earl's hosted event with Torstar. And so the question is, what is the nickname of Ghana?
Oh, the Black Stars.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well done.
I would have won. Would I have won some transitions?
No, you would have won that would have been the easiest question. So you would have won a soccer cap.
No,
or I like a t-shirt. Caps.
Oh, it's a small coffee at Tim's.
Small coffee at Tim Hortons.
No sugar, no milk. Not allowed.
That's all right. I like it black anyway. That's fine.
Yeah.
How was the event, by the way, before we move on?
Oh, you know what? It was a really enjoyable event. Unfortunately, I got 4 beers in. I should have left it at 3 beers. And I didn't sleep well. I biked home, which is about 4 kilometers uphill. Just I have a slow incline.
Isn't that illegal?
Well, I wasn't intoxicated. I wasn't DUI-ish.
Were you passed with 4 beers?
No.
You were over the limit, Dan Wong.
They were Guinness. Okay, stop judging me, everybody.
Are you not allowed to ride a bike when you're intoxicated?
I don't know.
Well, I can tell you that in Ontario, the law has changed as far as alcohol levels. So it used to be 0.08. Now it's 0.05 and you get a week suspension.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so do your math on how many.
The average person, JC, how many drinks is that?
Like 3.
Depending on what it is, obviously. Like 3 beers?
Maybe 3. So I did the math like way back when I did my smart serve, and 0.08 is I could do up to, if I'm like pushing, say, 200 pounds or 300 pounds, which I am, 500 pounds. No, I personally could do about 5 drinks in an hour. And I know that sounds crazy. And then I know, and that sounds nuts, but the quicker you do them, someone correct my math here, but it was about 5 drinks that you can do, but now it's about 3. So for someone who's, say, you don't have more than 3 drinks. How about that?
Yeah, we're not suggesting you should do that.
No.
Don't drink. Please drink responsibly, but 3, I think, is probably the maximum that anybody
right.
could do.
And that might be me after a Guinness on an empty stomach.
Well, I had four drinks over a span of 5 hours. So I was not intoxicated. The problem was I did that bike home as quickly as I could. And I got home, I was had a bit of a sweat. I didn't get to sleep till like 1:32 because I did that. Oh, there's a late, you know,
1:32 on the dot.
Not yes. very specific.
Exactly. But it was one of those things where I said to myself, okay, I'm gonna get home. I'm going to drink some water. I'm going to go to bed. And then I was lying wide awake because I had just basically worked out. and then I went, all right, I'm going to go on the couch. And I lay on the couch for a while. And then I watched highlights. So Colombia, DR, tons of Colombians in mm-hmm. the bar at Earl's. Going crazy. They were down at, I saw images and pictures at the Fan Fest in Vancouver. The Colombians came out last night. It was great.
They had a good time. Good time. Yeah. I saw the video too from the Croatian fans and the Panamanian fans in Toronto.
Yes.
Looked amazing. The atmosphere looked fantastic in that stadium.
Yeah.
It was. It was probably the loudest. Leading into that game, it was probably the loudest of all the games we've done down there.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Once the game started, it probably wasn't, but
yeah.
Some of the Croatians were talking about the atmosphere, like how much they appreciated it. It was Perisic, and he was saying, you know, thank you for staying with us through the first half. We were quite poor. We kind of woke up in the second half, but thank you for your support. But as I arrived into the city from Montreal, I was on the plane with some, like, I don't want to say it was half filled with Panamanians, but there were a significant amount of them making the trip to Toronto. And then as I walked to my hotel, it was just tons of Croatian jerseys, tons of Panamanians. And I know I saw the march to the stadium later on with the Panamanian fans. I think that the Croatians had the same thing. So it's great. Like, it's exactly the atmosphere that you would want for a home World Cup.
And it, you know, it seemed that in the stadium, I don't know how they work these tickets sometimes, but it seemed as though Croatia were 99% at one end, the south end, and the north end was 99% Panamanian. So it was like split. Like it was very interesting and actually very well done. But the other game seemed to be, you know, you have sections, you have more Germans, say, in one end and the north end and then the south end, but there's a lot of mixed in.
Yeah.
But this game in particular, it seemed as though they sold tickets one end for Croatia, the other end for Panama. And it was actually pretty neat.
That's what the Voyagers were saying, right? It was difficult because they had their main group, but a lot of them were sprinkled out throughout the stadium. They couldn't get a huge section to themselves. Right. But I thought it was really cool.
And Croatia had that whole end zone, like you would have thought Canada would have.
Yeah, exactly.
Behind the south end.
I don't know how that works.
Yeah.
How it works. It was cool, though, to see Luka Modric get his 200th cap in Canada.
Yeah.
Canadian soil. He is a legend of the game. And I don't think everyone quite appreciates just what he's meant to that country and the clubs he's played for, be it Spurs, be it Real Madrid, and before Spurs, I forget where he was now, but just one of the greats of all time. A guy that looks like he should be in a Charles Dickens novel.
It's true.
Should be a street urchin.
No, it's pre-game group.
He's amazing. I love him.
Special player he's been. He's and as an individual, I saw him way after the game was over, and he came out, and there's 300 or 400 Croatian fans, a lot of family at that stage and friends. And he was up in the stands and he was chatting to his family, off to other people. And it was just, it was like, yeah, he does this all the time. It was like, it wasn't even a big deal. Like,
He's one of these guys too, where you would run into him on the street and you wouldn't think he was an athlete of, any consequence or regard. And how was it for us to call a game? Is that the first time that you've called a game that he's playing in? Like when you call games like that, like I find sometimes if I've had the good fortune of calling games and players are very impressive. And sometimes I find myself just focusing on them, like if you're on a panel and you're like, maybe it's a nil-nil, there's very little to discuss. You're like, just do a pack on Modric, just follow him, put a spotlight on him, watch the masterclass in movement, in support, in finding passing lanes, in spraying the ball, just being the architect of everything, whether you're defending and knitting the team together or you're that deeper line playmaker like he is. So did you find yourself sometimes just getting caught watching him?
Yeah, watching him drift around. And then how teams defend him, because he's hard to defend because he's at center back position. next thing you know, he's at center forward. Right. And he's out right, left. He's all over the place. So you have to be aware of him, of course, because his passing ability is amazing. But all in all, his mat, he looked like he was getting older. Like he's missing a little bit. He gave a ball away a couple of times in dangerous areas. He just didn't quite look as sharp as he hopes. Yeah, I mean, fine. He's 40 years old. I just can't get around it. And they're going to be in a little bit of a transition. Obviously, there's some older players, legend players that are playing for
Perisic. Yeah, that midfield.
Yeah, too, exactly. Right? Yeah. So that's going to have to change. But what I understand is that they have a good pathway, and their under 17s and U20s look good, and there's some good players coming through, so good news for Croatia.
And for Modric, it's the best of times, and it's the worst of times. Go ahead.
Well done, Wonger.
Yeah.
Just enjoy them. You know what I like about the great players when you watch them closely, especially as they get older? It's not so much the incredible athletic feats, which you'd never get from the Modric anyway, but you watch them, they'll just drift 3 or 4 feet in a certain direction, right? And that'll be just enough to get that space. And mm-hmm. the average player just doesn't do that. They can't do it. Mm-hmm. But the greats do it. Messi's a prime example, right? A guy that is the best guy to watch now. Well, it's not more fun now than when he was at his best, obviously, when he's more dynamic. But just the intelligence. He just walks around, often just stands there looking at the play. You seen that? There's a video out there right now, just watching the ball move around, and then suddenly a little turn, boom, he's one-on-one, scores. It's just incredible.
Honestly, he sees five passes ahead.
He does. Yeah.
He's playing chess. Player. Yeah, mm-hmm. chess.
Yeah. But even to give credit where credit's due, like we're talking about Messi, but Ronaldo the way that he understands the game, and he executes subtle movements across the front line to either make space for a run that's coming behind, or like he's pointing. Like there's a little bit of performative kind of energy about it, but it's usually serving a purpose. So for his second goal, he points and says, like, but then he kind of puts his hand up, like, I don't want it to defeat. And then he curves his run. And then he makes the space to receive it to split the back line and then lets the ball run across his body. So doesn't hit it right away, like say Haaland did, I think for his second goal with his left foot, but he lets it run across his body. So it kind of changes the angle for the goalkeeper. And then he drills it along the ground across the keeper. So it's really incredible to watch. Like obviously there's a lot to criticize about him, but like he showed up when it mattered, and just watching the subtleties of his movement is something to behold.
Yeah, and that's not coachable, is it? That's just kind of innate, I think. I mean, he puts a lot of work into it, in fairness. Probably,
yeah.
He's obviously got out of this world natural ability. But when you compare him to Messi, seems to me Ronaldo is a guy that put more time into it off the pitch. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, he's built himself into this robot, this incredible specimen. You can never say about Messi, what an incredible specimen. He's just naturally, organically a freak. Mm-hmm. Whereas Ronaldo, man, he's at the gym at 4 a.m. He's drinking cows, fetuses, whatever he does.
Yeah.
I know he does. But
that's veal.
Weird stuff. Oh, that's veal. No.
It's interesting.
That's because, the veal deal, that's for sure.
A week ago, Craig and I went down to Niagara Falls with Craig's partner on the call on FIFA, Dave Stoll. And he knows, he started his career with at Man United calling games, and had the first iteration of Ronaldo. And he basically said that Ronaldo built himself up, and he goes, I respect it so much. And yes, he's single-minded and all these things, but it was such an interesting take about how hard he works and how diligent and vigilant he is about his approach to nutrition and working out and stretching and all of these things. And it was, you know, from what we see to what, you know, there's always something going on in the background. Everyone's got their own life. And, you know, what Dave was basically saying was for him to be this good, he goes, that's what I take away from Ronaldo.
Mm-hmm. That's good. We should get Dave on the show at some point, Craig. I think it'd be really interesting. Talking about that,
I'm sure
that part of rise of
he's
Ronaldo.
He's a really, really good guy, and he does a really nice job on the call. He's got a
great job. You both do,
Very generic sort of accent too. So he's born in Wales, lived mostly in Manchester area. A fan of Exeter.
Oh, really? Is he Exeter? Wow.
Yeah. It's his dad was a fan of them years ago. So yeah, it's just one of those voices that's not offensive and challenging. It's just very, very good.
Like Sherms's. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very offensive, my voice. always challenging me. Let's get to some Canadian talk, shall we, JC?
It's the World Cup Watch Canada, brought to you by Tim Hortons. It's game on with Tim's.
Yeah, with Tim's. It is. It's match day.
Not the question mark. It's game on with Tim's.
It is game on.
It is.
Game on with Tim's.
It actually is. Switzerland today. We'll get some comments shortly. I was asked this morning on a radio hit, you know, is it the biggest game in Canadian soccer history? My take is no, it's not, because it's not a must win, whereas Qatar was a must win. The question is it bigger than the Copa semifinal? I thought it was a good question, actually. It's a World Cup. It's a bigger event, but obviously a draw or a win and they're through in first place, which is crazy, amazing. But they lose, they're okay. They're going to be playing probably, what, Czechia or South Korea, probably, which is going to be a challenge in itself. But I don't know. Is it, where do you rate it? Copa America semifinal or World Cup third group stage game where you've already done the hard work and you're through?
I think semifinal, Copa America.
Okay.
Another thing to add to this, they could win the group and end up against Belgium.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, isn't that crazy?
It is crazy.
Who cares?
You're at home, but
shenanigans. Shenanigans, Jesse. Throw the match.
Finish second.
No.
He says he can't do that. They can't do that.
Foot on the gas. You play the same way that you played versus Qatar. It's going to be a different game. You're playing a tournament-tested team. They're going to have more of the ball, but the same high tempo, aggression, everybody working together, winning the ball back, whether it's on the counter press or setting traps for the Swiss, being wary of them putting overloads in wide areas. Like, I think you just play the way that you can, and then the result will come. You don't try to manufacture anything. Don't try to get stuck in the weeds. Just, I think it's the biggest game.
You do.
You have a chance, yes, to continue to build this wave of momentum and a chance to finish. You got your first point. You got your first win. Now you have a chance to finish atop Group B. Like, then people who have been in a slumber up until this point, they might wake up and they're on the bandwagon. Like, I think you're really onto something. So, yeah, maybe we could break it down a little bit more, whether it's the semifinals of Copa or it's this match right now. And, Sharms, you make a good point, too, that it's not necessarily a must win. But I think you win, and then you, like Trent was saying yesterday, you steel-toe boots and you knock that door right down. Like, you kick it open. And everybody's on board this train with the men's national team.
And also, listen, with respect to Korea and Czechia, there's something about playing a big team at a World Cup, isn't there? A really genuinely big team, like Belgium, kind of a sexy team. And even if they lose in that match, like, well, they're playing Belgium, man, that's pretty great. Even though, and by the way, Wonga, we owe you an apology.
Yeah, you do.
From yesterday's show. But Doku is in fact returning now.
Yeah,
the report.
You guys gaslit me. You made me question.
Yeah. No,
what I just read.
Because we were wrong. But the reports were, even the video was, that he wasn't coming back. And then it was yesterday morning.
That's what I had seen as well.
Yeah. So anyway, we apologize, Wonga. You were correct.
Okay, thank you.
He is back and won't actually miss a World Cup match. So all that crap, which we got into some depth with Trent McMillan yesterday, was all for nothing.
It was good bit though. It was a good bit, though. And even more than that, I was just thinking, if we do get Belgium, we get a tired Doku. He's sleepy. He's been up all night.
Probably.
Right?
Probably.
He's exhausted. Pink. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's the biggest match ever for Canada today, starting in 20 minutes. This is the time the stage is set. We can move football, soccer into the space that fills up summer sports. And it is an opportunity to get everyone aligned in Canada. So I don't care what other matches on the pitch matter, like tournaments, this is the biggest match. What was it? 8 million people watch the last match.
11, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah, or 11. Yeah.
Peaked at 11, yeah.
Peaked at 11. Look at the opportunity we have today. 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Everyone, it's going to be a gorgeous day in Vancouver, a gorgeous day across the country. Toronto's beautiful. It is going to be the biggest match ever for Canada, and we're going to win 3-1, just so you know.
You make a compelling case.
BetMGM says 3-1.
Well, so, I mean, listen, they played Argentina in that semifinal at Copa, just saying.
I understand, yeah.
But listen, you know what? Two things can be right. Let's acknowledge them both as being really good things, okay? And today is enormous. Almost unprecedented. In fact, it is unprecedented because Canada's about to potentially win a group, which they've never done before. Never got out of a group. So much. Remember the old days? Oh, hope they get a point. Oh, first World Cup point. Gee, it seems so long ago now.
Yeah.
Done that and surpassed it. Do you guys know what this game Mafia is? Do you know what it is? Anyone? This game that the players are playing? They're like obsessed.
I've heard of it
right now?
Because they play it, but I have no idea what it entails.
See, I assumed it was a video game, but it's not. It's like they use like a deck of cards and it's like just all like, I don't know, face-to-face. Because I got to training yesterday, standing right as there was like Promise, there was Owen Goodman, there was Joel Waterman, like four or five, all stretching, which looked really painful, by the way. All the band work. I hate doing band work. It's awful. But they were getting into it, man. We talk about banter. It was solid sports banter about this game. And the previous night they played this game, and Richie Larea got a great kill early on, apparently. And they're going back. It was great. It's really brought them together. You know, it used to be high stakes gambling, right, Craig, with lots of money on the line. I'm not sure that they're betting on this. They might be. I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
but
you got to make fun. You got to make fun. You are in a little bubble, hopefully. Yeah. And I remember like when we were in the Confederations Cup in Japan, we're playing cricket in the hallway. we had some doors open so you could play the ball into the room, and people were scrambling in rooms to try to get the ball.
I've done that before. That's great. Yeah.
And then Holger came out, and he goes, "What is going on?" "Oh, we're playing a little cricket." He goes, "No, no cricket. Get in your rooms."
There's the fun. Oh, the old fun police, Holger, comes out.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, these tournaments, Dubs, I mean, I imagine they are difficult to, because he's training what? For a couple of hours in the morning, maybe a video session. I'm sure there's lots of meetings, Jesse, lots of meetings. Mm-hmm. Maybe not as many meetings as with John Herdman, but probably lots of meetings. But there's a lot of downtime, right?
Yeah.
You've got to occupy yourself somehow.
Mm-hmm. And more because of your phones and social media and, you know, Snapchat. And like, they're probably talking to each other anyway, but they're closed off and they're each in their own individual room. So games like Mafia, like for us, it wasn't necessarily cricket in the hallways, but like I remember in Portugal, we were flinging oranges off of our patios and our balconies, like we just gong shows. Like we were down in Pan Am Games in Rio.
Scandal,
no, like Pan Am Games in Rio, and we were doing you have to eat like 7 or 8 saltines in a couple of minutes, and I made my teammates watch the Godfather trilogy. It's almost like a Clockwork Orange thing when I was like holding their eyes open. I'm like, no, you have to watch this one. At least get to the second one. It's the best one.
A lethargic display by Canada for some reason. Very, very tired.
That's
all right. The bloody captain's fault.
That's right. I knew it was you. You broke my heart when you're talking to a tank. No. But you have to figure out a way to, you know, back to that conversation about chemistry. You have to band together because you are in a bubble, like Forrest is saying. So you have to make it positive, and you have to get to know each other. Like it's an occasion that you don't want to miss. Like it's a once in a lifetime thing that you will look back on. And then again, the draw, like your phone's right there. But like for them to have something that is bringing everybody together, that they're really invested in, they're looking forward to, that is aside from the match and the training and the meetings that they're surely excited about, but you also need a break. So that it's coming together and it's building the team that way, making sure that culture is healthy. But it's a little bit of fun. It's a little bit of just a break from the grind and the routine of everything. Like it's really, really important. And on top of that, it's the stuff that you're going to remember long after your career is done. It's the stupid long bus rides, whether you stop at the 7-Eleven and get beer or not, and the card games, and whether there's high stakes or not, it's just for fun, or a game like Mafia. Like that is the stuff that stays with you, and that's what they're doing right now.
It is. That's a great way to look at it. But to not to bring the whole podcast down, but I had to look up because there was a 1.8% chance that Canada will not qualify for the next round. It was 1.8, right, Sharms? We looked at it. It was like 98.2% that they will go through. So Canada would only fail to advance if they lose to Switzerland and Bosnia and Herzegovina defeat Qatar. I think it's by six goals or seven goals or something like that. Pardon me?
It's like a 9-goal swing, isn't it?
Oh, 9 goals. Okay. I think it's a 9-goal swing. So everybody cross your fingers. Just know there's got to be a lot. The stars would have to line up in the negative way for us not to qualify. Just everyone, we're okay, I think.
I think we've arrived at a certain point, though, where that is, we're adding on after the discussion, right?
Yes.
Like that, it's not even, we're not leading with that. We're not even mentioning it casually because I'm convinced this team can go out and not only win, but, you know, get the result, get the draw and finish atop the group.
And if I'm American, I'm convinced we can win the World Cup, Canada.
Just so you know. Listen, this is exactly what they needed to do, right? It was growing in the tournament. And yes, they've only played the two matches, but you do it again with a good performance today, getting a result, whether that's a draw or a win. And then you get Fonzie back. Alfie Jones, like who knows what his status is like for fitness. He's out today, yes. But I just mean like in general, like where is he percentage-wise? Will we see him in the tournament? We might not at this point, right? But when we, before this, the ball was even kicked in this tournament, we thought, okay, Canada's got to play well, they've got to grow in the tournament, but you get do enough to get through the group, then you start to get Alfonso Davies back. You start to get Moise Bambito closer to 100%. And they're going to need guys in a back line because of the three who are on yellow cards. Like you, maybe Nico Seguir plays a bigger role. You know, maybe you see, you might see Joel Waterman, right? Like maybe Moise might even start. Like I know that might sound outlandish.
That wouldn't surprise me. I mean, yes, it would surprise me, but it's not outlandish to think that Moise starts. He's had a couple of weeks now of pretty good training. And he did get 45 minutes last match. Mm-hmm. And with the yellow card situation, if he's not going to hurt you, and I don't think he's going to hurt you, he may not be at his best right now. So he might start. And at this point, is the conversation, does he start for Luke de Fougerolle or does he start for DC?
I think he starts because for DC. If he starts, I think you keep Luke there and I think you sit DC.
That'd be a call from Jesse, wouldn't it?
He's made them, though, this tournament.
Yeah, he has. And I wonder about Fonzie, too. A big, you know, hoopla last night, the press conference, people saying, oh, he said he's going to play. He didn't say that. He did say, you know, the game will dictate whether he plays or not. He said the same thing last week. Nothing's changed from last week. So everyone's settled down. We might well see Fonzie, and there's way more chance to see in this match than last week. But he isn't definitely playing. And I still think, ideally, he gets an extra week. But if you're in a tight game and you get the chance to bring on the pace of Alfonso Davies against a tired back line of Switzerland, that's some ace in your sleeve, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And Jesse Marsh has to seriously consider it, even if he can only give you 15 minutes.
Yeah, I'm wondering. Yeah, it's hard to see and understand where he is exactly. My bet is that he's not going to be part of this match against Switzerland.
Interesting.
Let's just bring him on. Bring him on for 5 minutes. Get the crowd going. Even if they're winning, like just
use that sub. Get him on. Let him run around a little bit. Right?
Yeah. The crowd will go nuts.
He's a Vancouver. Like he's got that Vancouver relationship too with the Whitecaps, right? And the fandom. Yep. And I mean, obviously, just national fans and supporters across. But having that kind of local feel for Fonzie would be pretty cool too.
It'd be cool, but that shouldn't be a consideration.
No, I don't mean it that way, but
yes. It would be very cool. It'd be amazing.
Stop gaslighting me, Sharms.
No, but we saw what that triple sub did, talking about Jesse Marsh's big calls. The first one was to start Tanny and not Kyle, right? And then it was to sub Jonathan David off and also Stephen Eustachio. But that triple sub where he basically changed the entirety of the front line, you imagine, to your point, Sharms, about bringing in Alfonso Davies to run it, a tired back line for the Swiss, and then you couple that with a promised David, who's maybe leading your line, like how about that 1-2 punch? Like that would be nice to have as an ace up your sleeve.
By the way, Manuel Kanji was talking yesterday at the press conference, in the Swiss press conference. He's the former Man City player. He's on loan right now, I think at Inter Milan. What a well thoughtful, like well-spoken guy. Penny is super intelligent, this guy, and you can tell. Yeah. Great answers, really good answers. Seems like a really nice guy, whatever that's worth. But Wonga, do you have any comments you want to get to before we...
I just want... It was actually one of yours because you quoted on a tweet, you quoted Jesse Marsh, and it was about the tie. Do you remember what you wrote?
Well, yeah, Jesse says something like, the worst way to play for a tie is to get a tie is to play for a tie or a draw.
Yeah, like do I was I before we moved on to the actual comments, I wanted, like, have you either of you guys, Dubs or Craig, ever had a coach say, all we need is a tie, go play for a tie?
No,
no one does that, right?
Yeah,
looks at, Dubs is going, oh, I've had some shitty coaches.
No, we needed to beat Russia in match day three in the 99 World Cup, and we got resoundingly defeated 4-1. So we needed the victory. We needed all 3 points, but never in like a World Cup context did we have to go out and just get a draw. Mm. Maybe we did, though. Maybe 2007. No, you know what? Because we got the draw and we didn't go through. We needed the win.
Needed the win. Here's a... Oh, come on, man. Turn up.
It was worst way to get a draw is to play for a draw.
Right. It's a good line. Mm-hmm. Our friend at Philly466 on the YouTube comments, just a moment. A movement would have been had by now, especially with the Copa America semifinals run. So back to what Craig was saying. I see movement if Canada goes beyond the round of 16. So it seems to me, and I was going through a lot of our comments, it seems to be that round of 16 is the threshold to say, hey, this could make a change in Canada and the excitement could be at another level. I'm not sure about that. It's just, but that's round of 16 and then quarterfinals. It's the opportunity to play in the quarterfinals, right?
Yes, right, right. Yeah, I don't know. I think it would help and the buzz would continue and grow. But what we've seen so far suggests to me it's a movement. And I did the piece yesterday that this thing didn't just start at the World Cup. It's been building since, for me, 2019, and right. That US victory at BMO Field, which was an amazing experience.
Yeah, all growing, 12 of us. Me, you, Deechia, Deech, JC. There was, I said his name four times wrong, Gregor. But there was, I remember that game so easily because there was 13,000 people at a Nations League qualifying for the World Cup in 2019. And we Canadian drank fans. Beer afterwards.
Canadian fans, Canadian right? Fans. It was red. Yeah. That's what I remember. Yeah. That stood out to me, Craig. Remember? It's like, oh boy, you know, this is US, but what? And it was partisan Canadian. It felt like a real football crowd for maybe the first time. So, but listen, what's a movement? What I do appreciate is after that video, the number of people commenting about the other kind of movement, the ballot movement.
Yeah.
I appreciate the humor. So rather commenting on the insightfulness of the piece, they're coming, I'm having a movement, or I have one at 5:30 this morning.
That was a good one. Like,
thank you.
It's very footy prime. We appreciate it.
Yeah, we kind of dig our own grave, don't we, sometimes?
If I could just chime, I had a comment as well, Wonger, just about the moment versus movement. This is from P. Coleman, 1971. He said the Canada versus Qatar match is a point on a graph. The graph has been moving progressively upwards, but there are lulls. I see much more engagement from casual fans, and the only question is how to keep them engaged. Here in Vancouver, a huge step will be keeping the Vancouver Whitecaps, because it seems ridiculous that there could be no club team at BC Place where this victory happened. Huge. And there were lots of people who echoed the similar sentiment.
Hey, Dubs, I plan, depending on the training schedule, I plan to go to the Rise game on Sunday.
Kind of cool. Nice.
Yeah,
first time at Swan Guard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before, so I'm curious about that. And CPL kicks back into action on Friday as well. Like, are we going to see more people in the stadium? It's early, right? Mm-hmm. But it's going to be like a football buzz. And listen, mm-hmm. if you're considering it, do it. It's a World Cup. I know it's a World Cup. But this is a football celebration. Check out some lower league football. It's brilliant. Make it yourself. Make it, own it as a Canadian. That could be your club.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you're just right now, if you're listening to SiriusXM and Footy Prime World Daily, warm up your TV, get your antennas going, because the match is about to start in about 2 minutes. Warm it up. Get those antennas, the fuzziness, get your kid up on the roof to adjust them. Get up there. So here we go. I mean, it's what a wonderful day. Biggest game ever. ever for Canada's soccer.
Man, it's going to be loud there as well. Tay, the biggest, loudest crowd so far has been the Egyptian crowd, who just about surpassed Canada from last week. Canada today, I think, could be louder. It's going to be pretty special out there. It's going to be brilliant. Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Make sure you follow us, subscribe and like. Check out our various platforms and various social media platforms, including Patreon. We should get the store back up soon now as well, JC, surely. But until then, everyone, enjoy yourselves, enjoy the games, and we'll chat to you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Cheers for listening.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
Great show, guys.
Pretty good show. Mm-hmm. That's great. We
keep leaving like comments.
I know.
Whether it's Patreon, YouTube.
Yeah.
Like audio platforms.
Yeah, our interaction's amazing.